From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hey fuckers, it's me, Corinne, just reminding you to make your New Year's Eve plans with us here at Guys We Fucked. I have a really cool show that I do at New York Comedy Club East Village every year that I'm in town. And this year I said, you know what? I'm going to be in New York because I fucking love New York and I want to spend my New Year's here. So that's 6 p.m. at New York Comedy Club in the East Village. That's East 4th Street. It's a sick pre-game show lineup. You can get your laughs on and then go and get blacked out drunk, whatever you want to do. Incredible lineup. It's me. It's Christina Hutchinson. It's Ryan Long. It's Chloe LeBranch. It's Maddie Smith and Lev Furr. That's the sickest lineup you're going to be able to get for that price point. We're all in the 6 p.m. show, New York Comedy Club, East Village. The ticket link should be up at the time you're hearing it. But if it's not up, just know that show is coming. And that is what you're doing New Year's Eve, 6 p.m. And then you can all go off and do whatever the fuck you want to do. I might have a party, but that's a different thing. But you will be invited, like a party that I'll sell tickets to. But that's TBD, guys. All right. Bye. Thanks.
Welcome to Guys We Fuck,
the anti-slut-shaming podcast.
No, you haven't said?
I'm Christina Hutchinson.
I'm Corinne Fisher.
And I'm going to fuck your boyfriend. Bring us your slutty, your horny, and your shame.
Hey, you a slut?
Yes. Okay.
Let's talk about fucking.
What up, fuckers? How you doing? You okay? You good? You hanging in there? Welcome to another episode of Guys We Fucked.
It's the anti-slut-shaming podcast. I'm Corinne Fisher.
I'm Christina Hutchinson.
Welcome to the show.
We're here.
We're here. Are you subscribed to our YouTube?
You're not? Fuck you.
Do
can
it.
You subscribe,
please? We did another amazing live last week. Just press subscribe and then go watch it. It's a free episode. It's exclusive to YouTube. It's only there.
We
it's
take
never
going to
be anywhere else.
We get a lot of calls. I got to say, I think so we all fun. Said this at the end. That was our favorite YouTube live episode to date. Very well-rounded subject matter of phone calls.
It seems like the audience is kind of getting with it a little bit.
Yeah.
They're understanding what we're doing.
Well, I think they know we're gonna absolutely annihilate them if they keep calling in with these idiotic
dumb fuck questions.
Yeah.
Right.
You which know? Is great because then, you know, we're instilling this voice in your head that does some deciphering for you before you go and make the next move. So, hey, our work here is done.
Hey, listen, it's not like I don't have dumb thoughts, but I know the
all
thoughts
the
that I say out loud and the thoughts that I keep in my head. I don't fucking call
you're better,
it a show.
You're better at that than most.
But I mean, yeah, just say it out loud to you, like say it out loud to yourself in the mirror and then think, would you laugh at someone if they said that to you?
Right.
Doesn't
right.
mean you don't need help, but just not publicly.
Welcome to talk radio, ladies.
Well, I mean,
this is my life for 7 years.
Yeah. This new notion that we shouldn't be ashamed of thoughts we have and that we should just continuously ask for help out loud is not true. And you need to, I'm rescinding that right now for all of humanity because we're oversharing too much and y'all look like fools. Okay? So just keep that in mind.
But email us if you have a problem or something you want to get off your chest. It's sorryaboutlastnightshow@gmail.com.
You could do that. You know what you're signing up for. Listen,
yeah.
You know, I have no problem roasting anyone anymore because you know exactly what you're signing up for.
Yes, yes, yes. Corinne will give you the truth and I'll butter it up a little bit.
That's how it goes. So the old one too.
Yeah.
Here at Guys We Fucked. If you want to email us, it's sorryaboutlastnightshow@gmail.com. This subject line said, boyfriend's kink gives me the ick.
Okay.
Inspired by our conversation about the ick.
The audience is loving the ick.
The ick is a big thing.
The ick is a big thing. Yeah. Men didn't like it as much, but that's because they give us the ick. Sorry.
Right. Well, men tried to, we're like, oh, you know, I'm not in love with you anymore. So the way you eat makes me upset. But men are like, oh, that stubble makes my dick want to die. And it's
right.
like, well, okay. Hey, yeah. Whatever does it for you.
Yes, it's nothing matters. Okay, so hello.
That's true.
I love you three lots, but let's get straight into it. My long-term partner has a kink that was brought up in the last couple of years. It's chastity.
Okay.
Huh?
Not fucking?
Yeah, I'm like, that's weird. Or
well,
like,
maybe like a belt, like a like your dick's in a cage.
I'm guessing it's like, or like some kind of like a purity. Is that, we'll see how this unfolds. I've never liked the idea of this, but never gave it much thought. I hate the way it looks and it gives me the heebie-jeebies. The looks. Okay, chastity wait. Kink. Yeah, maybe a chastity belt. Yeah. A big part of this kink is giving your partner. Oh, yeah, she means a chastity belt. I was like, the concept of chastity. I was like, it's a little late for that, my friend.
Yeah. You're already a whore. Get on board.
Yeah. Well, this is some crazy old school
shit. Do they make chastity belts? Are they real?
It's a cage for your dick, and I.
Well, but I thought that that was something that they did in medieval times.
Well, it is. It is. In the Renaissance Fair Museum, there's a chastity belt for women, and it's like really like it's huge and heavy. So if they make them for men and women. I don't know.
So, yeah, it looks like maybe your dick can't really get hard. Well, I mean, you can't help getting hard, but like it's a metal cage for your dick. So if you get hard, that's got to hurt.
But that's the new kink fetish one. Initially, chastity belts are for women, not for men.
Right. I guess. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, to keep you pure before you were sold to
exactly.
Us.
Just in, yes, another part of misogyny.
Right.
I hate the way it looks and it gives me the heebie-jeebies. A big part of this kink is giving your partner the key so that they have full control over you. Your pleasure and when your dick is allowed to be free. I've always said that I'm down to try anything once, so despite not being attracted to this kink, I gave it a try. I wasn't a fan. I can't explain why I dislike it, but the ick feeling is there.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, this is not crazy that you got the ick from this. And I don't care
turned on, but, you know.
To have control over him.
The power dynamic.
There's something
specific.
Submissive about this. Like, yeah. I would sooner wear a chastity belt, I think, than be interested in my male partner wearing one. I want him to have his own sexuality independent from me, but this is a tricky one for him to do on his own. We are in an open relationship.
Oh.
I mean, you're two steps away from breaking up. This is hilarious. So theoretically, I mean, we're caging.
Thank God.
We're caging a dick. We're fucking other people. We're giving each other the ick.
We're about to move out.
Just get split up, please. Stop writing these emails. We are in an open relationship. So theoretically, he could give someone else his key to play that part. The problem is he's not interested in someone else for this.
Ah, damn.
Yeah, he wants to ruin your life.
Bummer.
And
I don't want to give anyone else the key.
You hold the key to my heart and my penis
dick.
Cage.
My cock cage.
Ugh. Oh my God. And honestly, that I just feel like I was assaulted on the subway when Christina said
cock cage?
Yes. And honestly, I would probably have a problem with another woman having that control over him. There's just
why
no
you're making you happy.
Jeff. There's just no making you happy. No,
this is
Rhonda.
All of our problems. That would be your fucking name.
For instance, I could be feeling frisky and he may not be able to use his dick because another woman would have him locked up.
I mean, have a backup key, you fucks.
This is not real. This is not a real key for security. Yeah. Why are we playing games like this? Any thoughts or advice on how this could work? Thank you.
You don't want to do it.
That's my advice. This is out of control.
You don't want to do it. If the kink gives you the ick, it's no dice. And I mean, but I will say, good on you for trying it.
Yeah.
Because I think a loving partner should be down to at least try something once, as long as it's not, you know, doesn't impede on your safety, your emotional, physical safety. That's very important. But you tried it. You didn't like it. So he needs to knock it the fuck off. Because I know that if he knew how grossed out this makes you, he's not going to want to do it with you. I have some kinks. And the part about being kinky with a partner that's so fucking fun is that the partner loves the kink as much as you. That's the whole fucking fun of it.
Yeah.
If they're not into it, unless it's a power play thing, but still, you have to be into it. If you're not into it, that's not horny. That's not hot. Ugh.
I gotta be honest. This show's getting real tough for me. There's people dying. Fucking COVID's overtaking. I have no meaning in my life. And then we're getting things about my boyfriend wants to lock his dick up in a cage and it doesn't do it for me. I mean, I don't really know what to say at this point. Happy trails. Just don't do it or don't do it. That's your. Those are your choices. And I would say you did it and you didn't like it. So then I would say.
So don't do it.
Don't do it again.
Yeah.
And if this is the.
That's how decisions work.
If this dick cage is the make or break in your relationship, you weren't gonna make it anyway.
Correct.
So just
set yourself
start
free.
Swiping.
Set it cock free. Set your heart free. Get on that app, girl.
I know why the cage dick sings.
Mm, it's because, you know, I didn't want to be a part of it.
Oh,
oh boy.
Good luck.
Okay.
Oh my Lord. I can't.
I love kinks. Hey, come see us live and hear us on other places. Hey, you know, Corinne might not want to hear your problems, but I, for some fuck reason, do.
I and like so- hearing problems that that one was I'm sure this is gonna be, I'm gonna be on some kink shaming website. Put me on there. Please put me on there. I would love to be on the kink shaming website. I'm not even
that's
shaming the kink.
That's gonna get up so someone could jerk off to it.
I'm not even shaming the kink. I'm shaming the fact that you wrote me about it.
Right. You thought about it.
Do whatever the fuck you want. I don't give a shit.
But we've been having this conversation like the last week about these people that like feel the need to write in or call into the show.
Well,
it's just like
to me. But though the kind of baseline rule of are you qualified to give advice is if you are asked for advice, right? Mm-hmm. But on the other end of that spectrum, what qualifies you for asking for advice is just if something's on your mind. And so, but what I think what you're saying, getting at, is like, do one step more and really think about what you're about to send us before you send it.
What help was I supposed to give you with that?
And you know.
Oh, no, I know.
You might want permission to dump this guy and you have it.
Well, yeah. And you know the minute.
Sometimes people want that.
The minute I got to paragraph 3 and you told me that you're in an open relationship, I tapped out.
Yeah,
and
right.
We're done. That's a wrap on you and that guy.
Guys who fuck buzzword.
Yeah. Open relationship.
And also, like, I mean, like, you know, it's interesting because it's like for kinks, it's like, okay, for me, it's like, do I feel neutral about it? Does it disgust me? Does it bother me on a moral or ethical level?
Has anyone's kink ever done that? Like bothered you or disgusted you?
Yes.
Which one? Not guy, but
one
kink
that I actually don't want to talk about.
Oh, okay.
But it's I talked to the person about it. I was like, this makes me feel uncomfortable. I was like, we could do it sometimes because I know you really like it. But I was like, I can't be all the time because then it feels like that's all sex is.
No kink should be all the time.
I was like, no, thank you. Not all the time.
Yeah. I've never had somebody approach me with something that made me give me the ick.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Guys, the weather's getting warmer. It's time to say goodbye to your jackets and all your sweaters, and you got to refresh your wardrobe. Well, luckily, I found Quince, and now you have too, because you're listening to this. Now I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And if you go to their website, the amount of categories they have, travel, lookbooks, men, women, home, babies, and kids, their stuff is so cute. So I own a couple items from Quince, and one of them is the Italian leather hand-woven crossbody purse in green, emerald, and I get compliments on it all the time. It's a small purse, which I really love because then I don't put as many things in it. Guys, Quince is amazing. They have very luxury items for very cheap prices. Get warm weather ready, baby, with Quince. Go to quince.com/GWF. for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/GWF to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/GWF. Just a horny gal, I guess. Anyway, sign up for my Patreon. It's patreon.com/Christina Hutchinson. And 4 times a month, I do group Zoom lamenting because I'm not a licensed therapist, but I can facilitate a group conversation and it's really fun. And I also do episodes of my solo podcast, The Voices in Our Heads, where I talk about all my mental health fuck shit. So sign up.
And then Without a Country, it's my political show. I roast the news. It's getting down. It's getting dirty this week. We're doing a whole episode on Casey Anthony based on that Peacock documentary series that just came out. Pretty wild shit. So check that out. It comes out Saturdays on YouTube and everywhere you listen to podcasts. But that has a lot of visual elements to it. So I do recommend watching it on YouTube and subscribing to Without a Country. I appreciate it. Even if you don't listen to the show, I know life is short and you only have so much podcasts to listen to. if you just listen to this show, just go hit subscribe on the YouTube. It takes no, it doesn't take anything away from you, and it gives me a lot. Thank you.
That's my kink. rate and review and follow Guys We Fucked on Apple Podcasts if you haven't done that already. It keeps us in the top 200, which I don't know if we're in or not anymore because everyone and their grandma and their mom has a podcast. But it's possible with your help. So give us a rating and review. And then youtube.com/guyswefucked without the U and fucked. That's the handle for everything, including TikTok, all the social media. Facebook, are we still on there? I don't know. Can you check and let me know? Thank you.
And we also are going to be launching this week our Guys We Fuck Clips channel.
Clips, baby.
That's what you got to do. You got to do this. You got to have a Clips channel
gotta
for your podcast.
Got to have a Clips channel for anyone.
Again, I know this feels like a lot to do, but really you're just going to go on and you're just going to click a couple things.
You're already at work, probably.
Yeah. Unless and it's going to be so helpful, and you're going to get all your clips in one place, and then you're going to get all your full episodes in one place, and that helps the algorithm. And again, I know this feels like, oh, I have a lot to do. Imagine if you actually had to clip up the stuff.
Right.
And your whole life was just clipping things that you already said. Wouldn't that make you want to kill yourself?
Uh-huh.
It would.
Yeah. You got to relive all the fucking dumb shit you said. Oh, cool.
Oh, this again.
Oh,
that's my tick on the camera.
Cool. What a path.
Ooh, my skin looked great this week.
Let's zoom in.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Oh, I forgot. Oh, you know what I'm trying to be really responsible and prepare a topic every single week. And
nice.
I did. So this is just a little one because I didn't have any like crazy aha moments this year. You know, it's the last month of the year.
Yeah.
Wrapping everything up, taking inventory on what went down this year. But a funny thing, I was on Sarah Weinshank's podcast a couple weeks ago called Shank. And there was a clip where we're talking about dating. And I just kind of said in passing that I think it's crazy to want love so badly that you eat dinner with a stranger. It's not something I've said before, but it just came out of my mouth. And then Sarah really liked it, so she clipped it up. And I was like, I do.
Hot take.
I do agree with it, though. I do. Like, when it came out, I was like, I'm not just saying this to be cool. Like, that's why I don't go on dates. And I mean, I'm very on record.
You really don't.
As someone who does not go on dates, they make me uncomfortable. You know, I'll go out with people I already know, but I meet people, you know, throughout living my life, and then we'll go out. So I'm not going to dinner with a stranger. I very rarely have done it, but I've done it, but I've rarely
done it, and it's not that good.
Yeah.
Dinner with a stranger is quite bad.
That you meet on an app, you're like, ugh.
A drink is okay, but not dinner. Dinner, that's like a whole evening.
But then when
you
just do drinks, you're like, starting off on the wrong foot? That's why I always do coffee.
Right. And then so many men in the comments got like
mad. Big old shit in the coffee shop.
They like got mad about it. And it was
And
it was so funny. One guy's like, go to bed and try again. You go to school with strangers, work with strangers. Your parents are initially strangers. This is not genius. Number one, to say that your parents are strangers is... you're literally made of them. That's the most idiotic thing I've ever heard. And like, they're not strangers. You grow in your mother's body. That's not a stranger, you fucking moron. Number two, you go to school with strangers. Yeah, being in a classroom with someone and eating dinner with someone are very different levels of intimacy.
Yeah.
And I know you're a man, I'm sure you struggle with intimacy, you fucking idiot. These are all fucking gas digital people, I'm sure.
Handle?
Meow.
No, you know why though? And then you work with strangers. It's like, yeah, everyone hates work because you're not with your friends.
Right.
Hello. Yep. So anyway, I'm just responding on the podcast to this, but it's just been so interesting, you know, this 10 years in the public eye as a woman with opinions, because I've known this for quite some time, but it's like really, really crystal clear that... men will just take you down on an intellectual level or will attempt to insult your intellect or the way you look when you are not preaching
something that benefits them.
Preaching the same things that will keep society tightly wound like it has been, where men are on top and women who don't have husbands or partners and don't have children are thought of as less valuable. Mm. And like, it's so fucking crystal clear, you know, because I think the first year you're like, am I annoying and ugly? And then very quickly you're like, oh no, I am just presenting ideas that make women powerful. Mm. And I think, like, I've talked about this before, working with some of my male colleagues, I mean, really proves my point, because I'm the same me. I look the same. My voice is the same. My thoughts and opinions are the same. But when I'm on this show, you know, I'm a dirty, annoying cunt. And then when I'm in a Ryan Long video, I'm cool, hilarious, and beautiful.
Uh-huh.
I'm the same person.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. But you know, when you're in the Ryan Long video, your opinions are to yourself.
Right. And the
you're
funny thing
a
is,
part.
My opinions aren't really to myself because Ryan lets me, he lets me like create my own lines a lot of times. And he knows that I have that I can't do all the video. Like I can't be a part of a lot of the videos he puts out because they will ruin my career.
Right, right, right.
So he's very careful about the videos that he casts me in. And he always sends me the script and we kind of work on it together. And that's why, I'm very proud of the things that we've done together. And I do, you know, I think people are surprised about the opinions that I have a lot of the time. Cause like, they'll be like, that's not how she feels. It's like, but you don't know how I feel. Cause you've never listened to my show. You just packaged me as this idea of a feminist that you have when in reality, both feminists and misogynists hate me. And that's who I am, guys. That's who I am. I have opinions that neither people like.
Everyone fucking hates it.
And that's why I'm right here in the middle. In the middle. Not getting TV gigs, you know? That's where I am. It's just been so funny. And they'll go right for your looks and they'll go right for your intellect and right for the fact and assume that you must be sad because you're not married. I don't want to be married. I have money. Why would I share that with somebody? That's the dumbest idea. If you're married, I honestly think you're dumb. You're both not doing well.
Oh, shit.
If you're both not doing well, great. Enjoy the studio apartment together. I don't know what to fucking tell
each other. Now that is a hot take.
I really don't, because I think there is.
If you're married, you're dumb.
You is stupid. No, if not, if you're
fucking idiot.
Not if you're, probably not if you're a man. If you're a rich man, probably stupid. Probably stupid.
Yeah, you dumb fuck. Why'd you tie it down?
I just think
all the hoes you want.
Yeah, we've
don't piss off your wife.
Package this thing as this thing that everyone must want, and then I think people
it
who get
the
into
government.
It are like, don't you want this?
Because they're suffering.
They got trapped.
Yeah, and they want you to suffer too.
It's
they
just
want
not
you to suffer
so.
Too.
And then also, I mean, I'll get into this further, but I mean, watching this fucking Casey Anthony documentary, it's just like, oh, also everyone, you know, we've all been tricked as women that having children is this like wonderful, magical experience where we're running barefoot through a field of flowers. And in reality, it's really fucking hard work and it's not fun all the time. That doesn't mean you killed your kid. It just means that sometimes you're having a hard time.
Yeah.
And I just, if we just all talked about this more, and again, it's just like, if we all were stopped worrying about how we appear to other people and started telling the fucking truth, everyone, especially women, would be in a way better place because our lies that we think are covering up our own embarrassment are actually just covering up the damage that the patriarchy has done to us.
Fuck you.
And I'm pissed about it.
Yeah. I'm not pissed about that, but pissed about other stuff.
You should be, man.
I'm more sad than mad, though. yeah. I've been doing a lot of activities that require me to not think about myself. That's very nice. Playing piano, stuff that requires balance, you know?
Like balance is good.
Balance is good. It requires a lot of your attention.
Yep.
Lifting weights. I haven't worked out in a while, but I need to get back on doing that. I'm just trying to focus on getting out of my head. Been going to a lot of Narcotics Anonymous meetings. Those are really cute because let me tell you.
They're really cute?
Yeah. Yeah. They're on
Another
Zoom.
Another hot take.
They're on Zoom now. They're on Zoom and they're every hour on the hour 24/7. Narcotics loves staying up late.
Is that right? They have a meeting for you available every hour on the hour?
Yep.
Wow. Well,
when you want to use, you got to get on Zoom.
That's pretty amazing.
They do this thing called Burning Desires. And if you want to use or you want to kill yourself, it's great. And there's this concept that I'm starting to get introduced to. Anne Marie kind of clued me in on it of like, I'll figure out a balance one day, maybe, but it's like, I don't know. I don't want to dump my feelings onto other people. So I just don't tell anybody and then I want to die. And it's like, ugh, I don't know where, but it's like finding the right channels for which things that are in your head. And I got to say that at Narcotics Anonymous meet, you could just fucking bitch for 4 minutes and they just, whatever you say, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You just say it. It's awesome. And then you're not burdening your friends. or your family, the one family member that you do have. You're not burdening. So that's really nice. I think they're very sweet. I think addicts are very, oh, we're a funky bunch, but we're trying. So if anybody is struggling with addiction, I think AA has this too. Like all of these Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, they're all online now. And you don't have to share and you don't have to have your camera on. So I think it's a really good resource if you're struggling with addiction to go to. And I wish more people kind of knew about it. So I just wanted to shout them out. Yeah. And then, oh, I just wrote, when a guy you love is coming all over you, it's a thing of beauty. And I stand by that. I really don't have anything to add to that other than like fucking thumbs up. You know what I mean? Thumbs up.
Just yeah.
Love it.
Rock
the
on.
Image of cum coming out of a dick of a guy that you're like, you're the best. It's just, it's, you know, that's my narcotic.
There you go.
Okay, bye.
What is a, oh, you know, I was actually thinking today, I was like, what is a love addict? Because I have some friends who are in like a love, you know, like love and sex addicts. And I mean, obviously I know what a sex addict is.
I mean,
it's a fake thing that men made up. But a love addict.
A figment of your imagination.
Is a love addict a thing that women made up? Because that also
what
might
is
be.
Love addiction? I mean, I would say, if you didn't get fucking love as a kid, you're going to be addicted to finding love as an adult. So that's what that's got
to
be.
Addicted to, yeah, but I think it's just like, I think it's people who are addicted, but I don't think a love addict, in my interpretation is that you're addicted to that beginning feeling.
Oh, like not, that's like a lust addict.
Not that actual, yeah. So pathological love refers to a pattern of behavior characterized by maladaptive, pervasive, and excessive interest towards one or many or more romantic partners, resulting in lack of control, the renounce of other interests and behavior, and other negative consequences. In love addiction, immature love, love that is uncertain, external, blind, and beyond one's control permeates one's life. So that explanation right there is not actual love. So it kind
of it's lust.
It kind of is what I'm saying. It's like
it's from
like
Psychology Today.
Love bombing and that kind of a thing. That's the kind of stuff that you're going to be responsive to.
There's a person that we both know that I've watched him love bomb the shit out of every female comedian in this fucking business. That person's a love addict, right?
I don't think he himself is a love addict. I don't think he's ever felt love. I think I think he's just a manipulative. Because
I've never seen a guy love bomb so many fucking chicks before in my life.
Pathological love must be distinguished from other conditions such as dependent personality disorder. I've never even heard of that one. Borderline personality disorder. In these disorders, the pattern of dysfunctional behavior is not limited to romantic love.
These fucking personality disorders, I feel like we got to start talking about them differently because a personality disorder can be a response to something. And I feel like people just use it as an excuse.
Yeah.
Not everybody. There's a lot of people, actually, in the Patreon group Zoom therapy and quotes chat that I do, there's a couple of people with BPD, and it's, but they're, you could tell, like, they're like working on it, you know?
Right. Well, and also, I mean, I also today, like, we're so obsessed with like naming things and saying that something is a disorder or and mental health that it's like we made names for things that are people that are just people acting like dickheads, you know? And you're like, okay, I don't know that's a disorder as much as it's just a personality.
You're just
flaw.
Guilty of being a piece of shit.
Right. You just can't let everybody off the hook.
Yeah. Everyone isn't suffering from, I mean, everyone is suffering, but not everyone is suffering from something that like needs, you know, medicine or help. It's just your own shit. I mean, yeah. Oh God, I watched that Xanax documentary too. Woo-wee.
Oh, documentary about
There's
Xanax.
A documentary about Xanax on Netflix.
What did you learn that surprised you?
Nothing really surprised me, just like that people really got real fucked up from taking
Xannies. I never took a Xanny.
Taking like antidepressants and Xanax, but but even though it fucked up all of their lives, they're all still on like a little dose of it.
I mean, I get that.
That was the consensus. I was like, oh, okay.
We're still on it a little bit.
This guy had like a beaker in his bathroom and he had to like take years like dwindling down like the amount of milligrams he was on. He was like, yeah, my chest doesn't work, my leg don't move, but you know, I still gotta get these Xannies. It was just like, what are we doing here? I mean, obviously I knew that the government was over medicating us, but this
it's fucked up.
Hilarious.
Also, this life is really stressful. I've never taken a Xanax, but I've heard it. Well, I heard it just a lot of people that I know just said it makes you tired, but I have no fucking idea. But I would say we're living in such a stressful time that if a pill gives you relief from your own thoughts, which is what people who love pills seek, It's hard to pass up.
No, for sure. But basically, then the therapist,
they help if you have. I mean, I've taken Xanax and Klonopin.
Sure, but they're just mute. It's just like pressing mute. Like it's not actually
a Band-Aid.
So it's not helping anything. It's just putting it off to a later date. How I would describe it.
I think it's more complicated than that.
Not according to the documentary, though.
Well, because documentary.
No, but I'm saying like this is doctors explaining it. You know, because like, even the
doctors that fit into the documentary.
I hear you, but I mean, I think it's pretty proven that those kind of medicines are just like, they're just quieting the voices. They're not solving the problems that the voices have.
Yeah.
And that's like, even like what the therapist was like, yeah, the only way out is through, like, obviously. And like I said, all these people are still on the fucking medicine.
But like,
they're just
have
on lower,
like,
doses.
What does Maria Bamford have? Unwanted thought syndrome or something, like pervasive thoughts? Like,
well, I mean, that's part of obsessive compulsive disorder. That's just like a little piece of that.
Yeah. But like, if that, I mean, that is stopping those thoughts putting a Band-Aid on something? Because could you even stop those thoughts without a pill?
Yeah, cognitive behavioral therapy. Oh, that's what that's what that's for.
Got it.
But also, obsessive compulsive disorder has no cure. So you could only kind of like, you know, fix that. But that's usually,
you just have to maintain it every day, basically.
You usually,
right?
Use like CBT and like immersion therapy for OCD. Mm. Medicating like in a pharmaceutical way, I haven't heard a lot of success stories about that with OCD. Mm. Not saying that it's not. But listen, everyone take whatever the fuck you want. I don't care.
More pills, more problems, baby.
I mean,
less.
I think
it's
pretty clear that you have to like solve the problem, though.
Yeah. You know. A girl did write me, I think it was on a bonus episode where I talked about, somebody wrote us in that they were doing a certain amount of milligrams of Adderall, however much it was.
Right.
And she got pissed at me. She's like, can you not speak so negatively about Adderall? That's your experience. And I was like, you know what, bitch? Yeah, you're right. It was my experience.
But also, the Adderall doesn't seem to be working if she's that angry.
You know, that's what I wanted to say. But I was like, as a recovering addict, maybe I'm not going to make fun of you for being a cunt to me because you're really heavily addicted to Adderall. I don't know. It helps people. And it's just like, please just know on this podcast, whenever I say something about something I'm doing, I'm just talking about how I feel and how I react. I react like shit to birth control. Corinne fucking loves it and doesn't even notice a difference, except she doesn't get pregnant. So, two different experiences.
My life would be terrible without birth control.
Yeah, my life would be dead if I was on it. So it's like, you know, everybody has their own experience. And my experience with Adderall is my experience with Adderall. Bitch, can't take that away from me.
But also, what the fuck does she care if you don't like Adderall?
Because she's probably mad because she's on so much Adderall. I don't know. She said,
what does it matter?
Well, no, she was just, I forget exactly what she said, but she was like, you know, I'm on the same dose as that girl emailed you, and that is a therapeutic dose. And I don't want people thinking that they like feel ashamed to get Adderall. I'm like, I'm not worried about that. Yeah, I'm really not. I'm just not like worried about that.
I don't think, I mean, considering how many people I know do Adderall, it doesn't really seem like there's a stigma around it.
I know, and that's what fucks you up, because you're like, oh,
so I think you'll
like
be okay.
This is like a drug I can do, and everyone goes, yay, because I'm productive.
Yeah, it's like a fucking party. People giving out Adderall like it's candy. I don't think anyone's like, ugh, she's on Adderall.
Yeah,
never
what a
heard,
loser.
Literally never heard that. should hear it more probably.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right.
You know you're about to hear. So, you're about to hear our guest.
He's amazing. He's a New York City based stand-up comedian. He's a popular New York City tour guide, and he's a longtime friend of us and the show. Please give a warm welcome to Tom Delgado.
Roll up, we don't give a fuck. Blowing clouds in the club. Don't believe in bad luck. We believe in good drugs. Pass the blunts up. Pass the blunts up. Pass the blunts up. Pass the blunts up. Roll up, we don't give a fuck. Blowing clouds in the club. Don't believe in bad luck. We believe in good drugs. Pass the blunts up. Pass the blunts up. Pass the blunts up. Pass the blunts up. Feeling high and I'm feeling divine. Cloud nine. You can't deny oversupply. Walk around like Frankenstein. Woke and focused, smoke mine. I pass it to myself. Even after COVID, bitch, I'ma still pass it to myself. Top shelf indica in the club in the peninsula. Grind on my face, there's some G-money or something similar. This bitch got all the gumption. In conjunction, what's your function? Or North Fortin, but yes, so eat my pussy while I smoke that dro. Granddaddy perp tucked in my skirt, my shit is homegrown. Hit it hard enough, then bitch, I swear I saw a leprechaun. Tastes so good, I could moan in a galaxy unknown. Ripping bones, went from soprano to a baritone. My fucks turned into dust, don't fuck with me, I'm gone. Storming and smoking, pop my pussy.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
We are here with stand-up comedian Tom Delgado, dying to tell us about his anal adventures. No, just kidding. We were just talking about bees and ants and how beautiful the insect world is and Mother Nature and how it's just fucking perfect. And you when you get in the animal kingdom and you're like, oh, there's roles, and that's why a beehive functions so beautifully. And then it always makes me think of, like, you know, domestic roles with the straight couples and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, maybe there is a good rhythm to that.
Yeah, and even just roles of people generally walking around the street. Like, some people are like beating people up. Some people thinking ways to do stuff. Like, everyone's got a different role.
I always think about this. Right? I'm like, thank God there's at least a couple people that want to do every job.
Yeah.
You know? Because, like, every job is fulfilled. But we need people that want to be, you know, doctors for the butt. We need people that want to be construction workers. We need people that want to be a plumber, you know?
And those are all going to go away. Everyone's an influencer now.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, the stats for, like, incoming, like, you know, I think, like, middle schoolers and high schoolers, like, the jobs that they wanted were basically all ones that, like, don't really contribute to society.
Oh, no.
So statistically, we're fucked.
Okay.
And I mean, not that I can't really speak. I'm not really assisting. So I can't really say anything about it. But, yeah, it's a problem.
No, but then even the doctors, like, even like you were talking about doctors at the butt, everyone has to be have
an
influencer.
Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. So they have to be influencers too. Yeah. So, or you
follow me at the butt doctor on TikTok,
exactly.
Y'all.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. It's pretty bad. All my favorite plastic surgeons. I haven't even gotten plastic surgery, but they're all on TikTok. So I don't know how they're injecting, you know, Botox
when they're just busy
and filler
uploading.
Because they're. I mean, this one lady is funnier than me, and she's hot. And
because
of all the Botox.
Yeah.
So I don't really know what to say about that. Dr. Anna Gershon or whatever.
I don't know
is.
How old she is.
Yeah.
She's just like a mystery.
Oh, she's a vampire. And then, but also that's the thing I like about Botox. The more you inject yourself, the more you look like you should be residing in a coffin. And that's kind of what I was going for all along.
Sure.
So.
Well, that's also interesting because the whole aesthetic is changing. Like like in 10 years, 20 years, like you're saying, like, people look like vampires and stuff like that. But in 20 years, people are like, what are you talking about, vampire?
Maybe it'll be like in to have wrinkles.
Yeah. Right, could exactly. It's going to be considered alt to have wrinkles or something.
You fucking loser, you got Botox in your 30s.
Everyone's got Botox, man.
Well, there's like a conversation about, like, you know, on Seinfeld, when that originally aired, like, George is supposed to be like 29 years old. And they're like, this is what a 29-year-old man used to look like.
Right.
And now, I mean, when you look at him, he looks like he's about 42 and like a rough 42.
Yes. Yeah.
Like a Midwest 42.
He's so stressed out because his parents are just on his ass.
Yeah, it's pretty bad, but also good. Anyway, hello, welcome to the show.
I love having comics on that we know, but I don't have an excuse to ask you about your sexuality or your romantic life or like what does being a man mean to you, unless you come on Guys We Fuck. So we're here, and I'm so excited to dive into your world.
Cool.
I feel
real
like,
easy question to start. What does being a man mean to you?
Holy Lord. I don't know. I guess I don't know. That's tough. I guess I don't know. I always tend to think like,
you seem like a gentleman.
I'm a gentleman. You hear that? No, but I think it has to be free. I guess just trying to be free to do, kind of like, as a man, I guess you want to kind of be free to do and make the decisions you have to make and want to make. And not feel constrained, whether it's with work, whether it's with your relationships and all that. I think that's kind of part of it, you know, I guess feeling that control of your life.
Yeah.
You know, I guess that's part of it.
Is control an illusion, though?
Maybe. I think it is. I mean, who knows? I mean, I guess it's possible that we're all just kind of living out the path that's already carved out. And I'm going to get hit by a car in 10 years and there's nothing I can do about it. And I'm going to pretend like I can do everything. But I don't know. I guess that to me, just off the top of my head, would probably be something like that. That's something you strive for as a person, generally, I'd say.
Yeah. Well, you're first generation American.
Yes.
Which is very interesting.
Yeah.
So is there a difference between cultures in terms of, like, masculinity?
Yes. For sure. I think like in Latin America, I mean, my parents are both Nicaraguan, and in Latin America specifically, like Central America and a place like Nicaragua, it's very more traditional roles.
Right.
You know, it's like the breadwinner, you know, and yeah, then the bread losers, you know. So it's like,
is that us?
Yeah, exactly.
Or the bread eaters.
Exactly.
The bread makers.
Eater. Yeah.
That's right.
I make your sandwich, bitch.
Exactly.
Pay me.
But that's the thing. It's those things are like expected and you know, there is a lot of pressure on those types of things, and you kind of just get used to it. Like everyone you look around to growing up, all our family friends, all the family, everyone, that's where they were. Like the mom did this, the dad did this.
Well, the fear is real, but like the thing is, it's like fear that society will collapse if we don't abide by our roles is always makes me laugh.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if it's a role that's been around for hundreds of years, you're like, all right, yeah, I get why there's deep roots here.
Right. Right. Well, it's also too assuming that, society needs to be a certain way or it collapses. Yeah. It can evolve the same way. Yeah. You know, and that's kind of, I guess you're seeing kind of a backlash to that now. People are going back to like the traditional values and all this, that, and the other, because they think that literally society is going to collapse. There's less people having kids. But who's to say that people should be having as many kids as they have?
And let it collapse.
Right.
Yeah, but let it collapse. Is it a good society? Like, we'll rebuild.
Because people are worried about like the birth rate decline.
Right.
But then it's also like, well, we don't have the resources for the people that we have now. So why would we be concerned about this?
Right.
I mean, historically, a birth rate decline is not good. But I mean, we've never like kind of measured that in modern times.
Right.
It just seems like they're like, the number's going down and it shouldn't be going down. But maybe it should be.
Are we also overpopulated?
What?
Aren't we also overpopulated, the planet?
Well, I mean, I just think by looking around, I've assessed yes.
Yeah. I mean, where we live is...
I didn't read it. I mean, like, I think there's different parts. I mean, like, there's states within the U.S. that are, you know, fine, that have lots of room, but no one's going there. Like,
right.
Montana.
Right. And so, somebody told me the other day the population of Canada is like 30 million. And I'm like, I didn't check that. So don't, Chad, don't, I'm not saying that that's true. But whatever, it was a crazy low number because I'm like, oh, the landmass is sort of similar to America, but the population's way less. And it's because in America, we live off of your fear and your money. And apparently that's really addicting to a lot of people around the world.
Well, also, just to interject, there's also a massive tundra in Canada. Like the top of Canada
is
not really livable.
That's a good,
So but, it's little under 40,000. It's like 38,929 million, yes. As of that's like the 2021-22 consensus.
Okay.
Well, yeah, and Australia's got like 30 million. Australia's got like
that's
a little bit.
Wow.
Yeah, like less than 30. And that's the size of the United States pretty much. Australia's pretty surprisingly, but.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And we're 332 million.
Jesus, that's so many people.
Yeah.
That's so many people. So how were you raised?
Okay, so I grew up in Tampa, Florida.
All right.
Yeah, grew up in good old Tampa, Florida.
The American way.
Yeah,
I always forget that about you.
You don't seem Florida.
Yeah, in a good way.
But you know what? Florida's a hard one to pin down. What is a Florida? I mean, like, there's so many different types of weirdos and trash or whatever from Florida that you're just like, what is a Floridian anyway, you know?
A lot of people from New Jersey who just got cold.
Yeah
right. Exactly. There's like a different brands. But I think that's what kind of makes Florida so funny is like it is such a mix of weird people, myself included. I guess that just all over the map.
Yeah, like the population of Miami is one.
Exactly.
And the population of Lady Lake, Florida is a whole different
ballgame. Yes, right. You go to the Panhandle is a whole different ballgame. You go
Key
to like
West.
Orlando.
It's a bunch of old people having orgies,
Key West,
which is awesome.
Key West is wild too.
Yeah.
So but it's so different. But yeah, I grew up in Florida and then I went to college in Florida, state school, University of Florida. Which was another adventure, you know. And then,
did you have a lot of sex in college?
Not really, actually. No, I didn't.
Do you have a lot of sex?
Tom was learning.
I was learning. I was actually in college. I hung out. I was actually in a fraternity in college. Which
I know. What was the fraternity?
Well, what happened was
Phi Beta Beta.
Yeah, exactly.
Dick stamp.
Yeah, right. I ate a pie. I was in a fraternity because I had a lot of friends going to college from high school and they all did the fraternity. And I was like, whatever. Yeah. I don't have my own free will yet.
Did you get hazed?
Yeah, we got hazed a little
bit.
What
was your hazing?
I mean, it wasn't that bad. I was a pretty bad, quote, pledge. So I didn't really do a whole lot of work.
Right.
I just kind of skipped out on a lot of stuff. And I think people kind of like held a grudge against me for that reason because
nice.
I just didn't really care that much. But, you know, they'd yell at you and do stuff like that. And it was kind of dumb. Pretty tame compared to like
Penn State.
Yeah, some other places.
Bitches be getting murdered for
their hazing. There was like a school in University of Central Florida, go figure, where I think they tied a pledge to a Jeep.
Nice.
And then the Jeep rolled. Like, it was tied to, like, the outside of the Jeep, and it rolled or something. And, like, this was, like, years ago. And it was like, oh, well, that's not good.
Yeah.
So I guess getting called, you know, a loser is not so bad.
That's what happens when your brain isn't fully developed yet and you're all members of a club.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But the problem was that UF, for example, 20% of the population is in the, quote, Greek system. You know?
Right.
So you're just like, yeah, whatever, you know. And it is what it is, you know, and, you know, you learn stuff about yourself. But after college, I went to law school, and that's where I, quote, kind of found myself and started being a person who didn't have to, like, you know, as much as before, at least. So
how does one find themselves in law school?
Well, basically just doing what I, you know, making new types of friends, different types of people. They're not all people who look a certain way. They're all just kind of, like, branch out that way and kind of start to figure out, what do I want to do with my life? You know, whereas in college, I just kind of went out every week to the different bars. And, you know, there was a bar called Balls. There was a bar called Balls. Yeah. Okay. On Wednesday.
Let's go to Balls tonight. Dude, we have to.
Dude, don't be such a pussy. Come to Balls. You know, like, that was basically what it is every Wednesday.
Right.
But then you get to law school and you're able to go out and, like, you know, and meet people and start to think, what do I want to do with my life? And it was there where I first did any type of comedy.
I like that you get to law school and then you're like, you know what? I think comedy is like pissing away money.
Yes.
But, like, okay, so you said, like, you figured out what you want to do with your life, but, like, shouldn't you have made that decision before you went to law school?
Yes. Thanks, Mom.
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah. Your parents made you go?
No, well, kind of. What ended up happening was I'd kind of made a deal with them. I have a younger brother and sister, and they were going to college. And they're like, look, if you're going to go, you got to go now.
Okay.
I went to college on a full ride with the intent of going to some kind of grad school. I didn't know what it was.
Okay.
And I figured, oh, law school seems okay. My grades are decent. So I had to go right out of college. And I went right out of college, not really knowing if I wanted to do it. Got there after a year, I was like, you know what? This really sucks.
Back this truck right on.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like everyone thinks they want to be a lawyer. Well, and then you see the amount of reading and stuff and, like, how little time is spent, you know, being Marsha Clark on the stand.
Yes.
Because that's what because I mean, basically, it's just like, it's kind of like performing, but with a deeper meaning.
Yeah.
And then I was like, yeah, I'll just like take away the deeper meaning and do stand up.
That's right. I had to tear down my Marsha Clark poster when I had to come to grips that I wasn't going to be Marsha Clark.
God damn. What kind of law were you studying, or do you have to decide that you're young?
Well, at the time, I was interning and doing stuff in the political field. Like, I interned with a senator. I worked on campaigns. I was kind of going that route a little bit.
Yeah, that's right, because you're the first person who ever mentioned AOC to me.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You were the one that said
that was me.
Tom, years ago.
Yeah, you called that one,
He knew about AOC before anyone I ever met in my life. He was like, there's this, what was she, bartending or serving? You told me about her.
She worked in restaurants.
Like, she would be great. And, like, and that's not that I didn't believe you. I just was like, I don't even know how to, like, go about contacting this person. But you were God.
You
are so right.
Well, it was so funny. That story is crazy. It's one of those, like, New York stories.
Yes.
You know? I literally would go to this restaurant, Union Square Coffee Shop. Loved it.
That.
I missed that place. Yeah. The food is so good. It wasn't
that
expensive.
I've seen so many Real Housewives at that fucking place.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's not there anymore, unfortunately.
Right.
That's what stinks. But I used to go there all the time. And she caught my attention. And I had a huge crush on her, actually.
I was like, she caught your attention?
Crush on her, yeah.
Yeah.
She's so cute.
No, my girlfriend's going to hear this and get pissed. But no.
It's AOC. Every
girlfriend. How long have you been dating this woman?
But no, we were there at the restaurant together. Exactly. Right. No, I kind of, like, had a crush on her. I'd come in, we'd start talking, I got friends with her. She had a boyfriend, so I was like, whatever. I just became friends with her. And get this.
You just brushed aside. You're like, listen, she has a boyfriend, so I guess I'll just listen to what she has
to say. I guess I'll just form a real relationship with a human being.
Like a genuine connection.
Exactly. Oh, great. We have to talk about stuff. No, but it was actually, this is gonna crack you up. She was actually really into, she had, like, a political blog, and she wanted to try stand-up comedy. She came this close to coming to an open mic that I used to
run. Choice.
Yeah,
you could have detoured her entire life. Tom.
You could have changed the course of the United States.
She could be at a dingy bar performing for five people right now.
She never would have gone to the Met Gala.
No,
holy crap! Was she funny?
She was very interested in comedy. She knew a lot about comedy.
I watched her. She was not funny.
She didn't tell jokes or anything.
I watched her videos. I think she's actually very funny.
Definitely got
her,
like, an attitude with like,
she's charismatic. You know,
so yeah, and she's got, like, a snark at times too. So that, I mean,
she calls people out. She calls motherfuckers out in a way that's very political. That's, like, not too harsh, so people aren't gonna jump on her, but it does get the job done.
Yeah, it's true. And she'll say what people are thinking. And
yeah,
people so it's funny because she almost came to the open mic that I used to run.
Oh my God. God,
and that might have, like, I would have been like, whoa. But it's funny because what ended up happening was, like, we come in, I talk, and then she told me, she's like, oh, I'm going to run for office. I'm like, oh, that's great. You do it. You know, I was coming like, yeah. I would check in with her and be
Tom
like,
oh, was her number one fan.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, this is great. And she'd be like, oh, we have like 500 Twitter followers now. It's moving. I was like, oh, great, great. And then she stopped coming in and then she won. I was like, holy shit.
Right. That documentary kind of chronicling the time between when she, you know, when she was Tom's friend too. Yeah, right. Wow.
But it's funny because I'm sure she doesn't even remember me now. But
no,
like,
she probably does. She's a politician. That's part of it.
Yeah, right. Or pretend to remember you at least.
Maybe. Yeah.
Oh, hey, what's his name? What's his name?
I think if you talked that many times.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? But it's funny because like I even texted her like after, and she had said she was a fan of your guys' podcast. And that's why I suggested you guys.
I didn't know that part.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was like, so what kind of comedy?
You're welcome anytime, right, exactly. AOC.
She said she was a fan of Guys We Fucked. And I was I'll contact.
Well, Corey Booker
Corey
listens
Booker.
Too.
We met Corey Booker at our first Red Carpet event. And I was like, oh my God, it's Corey Booker. I love him.
Or has listened to the past.
Yeah. And he's like, oh my God, Guys We Fucked. I'm like, shut the fuck up.
That's hilarious.
It's the best moment, one of the best moments of my life.
So AOC, I mean, so I guess AOC. We can credit ourselves with, you know, partially with her success.
Yeah, well, that's funny because she said she was a fan. I was like, oh, cool. I'm friends with them. I was like, yeah, I could talk to them.
Oh, okay.
So this is all we got together. Tom was trying to use our podcast
to get some pussy.
No,
she ain't gonna stay with that guy for too long.
I knew there was a loose end somewhere.
I mean, you know, you gotta play the cards you're dealt.
Sex makes the world go round, and if it wasn't for me wanting to fuck certain people, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. So I get
so I'd be further ahead.
For
if we're being quite honest,
for sure.
Oh damn. Okay,
that's incredible.
It's a funny random story, and it's like, oh yeah, and it's like a weird little New York thing. So you never know.
I love that. Her energy, like I have a crush on AOC because her energy is just fucking fantastic. She doesn't allow the depressing nature of politics to get in her way. And I follow her. I watch her videos a lot. And I'm like, you still have a spark in you, girl.
Yeah,
that's so fucking impressive. You've been a part of the government for years now. Oh my God.
Well, and to her credit too. She was like that at the restaurant.
That's amazing.
She was like that at the restaurant. Well,
you have to be naturally like that.
But you'd be surprised. Like at that restaurant, it was always like models working there and
right,
stuff.
And
she was very like, you know, hanging out with the bus boys, everybody, and everybody just liked her. It was kind of cool.
She's born to be a fucking politician.
Yeah.
And like a good one.
A good one, right.
Oh, it's so exciting.
Well, I could just tell by the way you talked about her that she was obviously like, there was something. Because you don't really hear people talk about others that way, like, because there was at the time I thought there was nothing in it for you, so I was like,
but there wasn't like I said she was just friends. She had a boyfriend and everything. I was trying to be
it was that same guy, right? Because they've been together for a long time.
She was running for office too, and I was trying to help her out.
The crazy thing about AOC, like when I watched that documentary, she's like, yeah, one of the things I did with my flyer was I said when you have to vote on the top of the flyer, and she's like, look at this flyer, look at every single political flyer I get in the mail, doesn't say the date of the fucking vote.
People
have
just
to go.
Assume. Well, I mean, you know, it's like people should know election day, but they don't.
But they don't. Right. And it's like, I don't fucking know it. Like, I need a reminder. Like, you need to be spoon-fed certain things in order for you to do it. And it's like, man, she just had. Yeah, I just love her. I love her. That's so cool. That's really cool. I didn't realize that was the origin story.
Yeah, really random. Yeah, yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
All right, so back to law school.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, okay,
did you fucking law school?
I mean, I did go out a lot more in law school. That was kind of like part of my like finding myself. I would go out, and because of that, my grades suffered. You know, I'm not going to lie. My grade wasn't the best law student. For the first year, I actually, you know, I kind of was like, oh, this sucks, but I'm having fun, you know? And so I went out a lot. I actually studied abroad. I went to Argentina for a semester.
Ooh.
That was pretty cool. You don't really do that a lot in law school if you want to be a serious law student.
I was going to say, I was like, I've never heard someone studying law in Argentina.
Yeah, I was like, I don't want to be here, so I was like, screw it, I'm gonna go. I set up
you know the Argentinian law system, kind
it
of
really
like
is.
A really foundation
yeah,
for
exactly.
American law.
It's like the same thing, right?
Yeah.
So I went over there and basically was studying law with a bunch of 20-year-olds because at that time it's undergrad over there. So it was a total joke. I traveled around, hung out, it was super fun. So yeah, I kind of partied a little more in law school and everything, and I was way more insecure, I think, too. So I think that played into
insecure about what?
Just insecure about like people liking me and wanting to be like accepted and cool and all that stuff. So I think a lot of that pressure pushed me to be more of like a party guy and all that stuff that I don't think I really was, you know?
Yeah, because even like, I mean, I met you pretty early in comedy in New York, and like, I don't ever remember you being like, Mr. Like, I'm going to go out and fucked up.
Yeah, right. And I did that a good amount in law school, I think partly because of that. And, you know, and you kind of con yourself into thinking you're having fun or everything, but it's always like
every day.
Yeah. You're out at night. night and you're like, yeah, this is great. And the next morning you're like, I'm such a piece of shit. You're like, I hate my life. What am I doing?
I love the post-drinking depression.
Oh, it's the worst. It's the worst.
Man. And all your insecurities get just right on the surface.
Oh, completely. And the thing is, now I don't drink really anymore because of, well, one, the hangover physically, but also the like that emotional, psychological hangover.
Yeah, yeah.
We're like, terrible. What am I doing anxiety. With my life? What am I doing with my nights and my time? This is crazy. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the reasons why I don't really drink anymore. But yeah, I went through that whole phase kind of in law school. And then it was funny because when you said, like, I met you guys at the beginning, especially specifically Corinne, I remember meeting you early on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that time when I found comedy and doing all this other stuff where I was like, I don't really need to drink like that anymore. I don't need to go out like that anymore. I was like filling a void that comedy helped me fill.
Yeah. It's also impossible because like the times like when if you're doing even kind of well in comedy that you would be drinking,
right.
You're doing comedy. And I was never a comedian who drank or could even drink while I was performing because you figure out really early on or, you know, or some people do that it fucks up your rhythm and your timing.
Some people do it. I don't know how.
I don't know how they do it.
I used to.
You weren't getting like tanked on me. I knew people who were drinking 12
tanked.
Drinks.
Yeah.
No.
Well, and good comedians.
A drink.
I could never do
it. Wait,
that.
I mean, Dave Attell, notoriously, I mean, right. And it's not like he didn't stop because he wasn't funny anymore. He just stopped because I think it was like taking a toll on his health and he wanted to be there for his mother.
But that's alcoholism, what you described.
Right.
Yeah, let's be honest.
I mean, we're surrounded by it. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, that's everywhere. What it is. Functioning alcoholism.
Alcohol is poison. What was the topic you said that Tom was really could speak to the philosophical
crisis?
Well,
I said, I mean, Tom and I would always like have a series of like lunches just randomly. Like, he's like the only person who like ever asked me like hang out and just like never. I was like, oh, we're just like hanging out to like have human interaction.
Oh, that's nice.
And I'm so fucking suspicious. I was like always like, what the fuck does this?
Yeah, we do say no grown man wants to be your friend here on the show. That obviously is not applicable to
everybody.
I didn't
think he was like trying to fuck. I was more just like, I was like, what? Why
what do you want from me?
What's his
angle?
Person
always checking. And I was like, but I was like, I enjoyed spending time with you. So I'm like, interesting. I'm just like a suspicious person.
No, I don't blame you.
This is me.
I don't blame you.
So I was like, well, I'll just keep showing up until something weird happens.
Right. And there it is. Weird until happens. The smoking gun.
No, right. No. And then, but yeah, you're like one of the most, I don't even stable or like, it's more like self-actualized people that I know.
Oof.
And like, you would think that.
Does that hurt to hear?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I could be farther from the truth, but I think in my brain,
well,
I'm good at like.
Well, or you've done the work over. or you're attempting to do the work. I mean, I remember like years ago
that's,
before it was
true,
hot,
sure.
Like you were like so gung-ho on trying to make me meditate. And I do meditate now, but you were like
love
the first
meditating.
Person to earnestly say it where I actually just didn't have it go in one ear and out the other. You know, and then Nikki Glaser followed it up, and I do really respect the way she navigates the entertainment business as a woman in comedy. So I always listen to what she says because I feel like we have a lot in common.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you were someone, and especially for a man who was doing a lot of work on himself before it was like in fashion.
Right.
And so I think that's what I was like, I just like put that away in my head.
What sparked you doing work on yourself? Obviously, sometimes it's a self-hatred or
I think it's desperation. Yeah. In some sense. You're like,
If I don't fix this, I will die.
No,
why I did it.
You're kidding in a way, but that's kind of true. It's like at some point you're just like, make the voices stop.
Yeah, uh-huh.
You know, and it's like, just make them stop in any way, you know, and one way is alcohol and all that stuff. But if you know how bad that road can go, you're just like, I got to find something, you know?
Sure.
And I think in terms of just reaching out to people, that's something I want to try to do more of. Like, like you were saying, like it just reaches out to hang out. I think it's so funny because in comedy, especially, you meet so many people where you're like, this person is cool. And then you don't see them again for another year.
Right.
Sure.
You know, it's like, and it's hard, I guess, because everyone's got an angle.
We all live here. So like, let's do lunches.
Yeah. Right. And it's like, we're going to be in the city anyway. Yeah. We're going to eat lunch anyway. We're going to do. So that's what I would try to like tell myself to do more of.
Smart.
And sometimes it works out. And, you know, life gets in the way a lot of times, but I try to check in with people and try to like, you know.
That's lovely.
You're really good at it. I mean, also, I don't even know. You have some kind of like effect because normally I would say absolutely not to a request like that.
I love
staying in my house and with my dog. And like, there's no very few reasons why I would like emerge from the lair.
Right.
So it's very interesting. But like, so what specifically like happened in your life? Was it just like self-hatred or insecurity? Like,
self-hatred.
That got you into meditating
or
like doing work on yourself? Because it's
demons.
Just not a thing that we really see men doing unless a woman tells them to.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I think what you were saying before, Christine, is true. It's like, it really is just kind of like this this desperation to just get rid of these voices. And I think with me, for example, I've always been really hard on myself.
Right.
And I go to therapy and stuff now, and I think it's good. And that's another thing that I wasn't willing to do until a few years ago. And I finally went, and I was like, oh, this is, I can't believe that not everyone does this. You
did
know?
Someone tell you, like, say, yeah. please go?
Well, growing up, like I said, it was a Latin American household.
Yeah.
Nobody no in feelings. Central America goes to
right.
therapy. Like, it wasn't even a thought sure. like growing up in our household. So just doing it, people were like, oh, do the therapy. And I was like,
You weren't even at the point of getting called a pussy if you want right. to talk. Because it's like, what's
yeah.
that?
Why were
like,
you?
Like, it wasn't even that. It wasn't even at the bullying yeah. stages.
They're like, what is the dog talking right. to you? What do you need, right. to, what do you right. need to, what do you need to go to therapy for? So it's like, all right, I'm not going to go to therapy. And then everyone here does it so much and talks about it so much. I'm like, all right, yeah. I'll try it. And I always thought that it was like for like losers and people who just get a grip, man. It's yeah. reality.
I always just
know?
Thought it was for people who had like a much like tougher
yeah.
start.
Right.
Basically.
Right. And yeah. that was what I thought. And I was completely wrong. Like, it's just, it's like a, you know, I remember hearing someone compare it, like even Roger Federer has a tennis coach, even though he could beat the tennis coach with right. both his hands tied behind his back.
Sure.
It's because that guy can see you from the outside. That person can see you from the outside. They can point out habits, and obviously they're very well trained and know these things as well.
Uh-huh.
So they can tell you these things where you can't see, you know.
And the mind is the cause yeah. of all suffering. All suffering sure. truly comes from the thoughts that your mind is feeding you, and that's really automatic a lot of the times. And I think therapy is like going to the doctor for your brain. Like,
yeah.
it's just like, let's clean out these thoughts yeah. and figure out the roots and kind of dissolve them.
Well, and also let's make sense of these thoughts, because right. like our thoughts are yeah, also yeah. not necessarily us. Like
right.
some of your thoughts,
they are not.
Yeah. Some of your thoughts are your third grade PE teacher. Some yeah. of your thoughts are your dad. Some of your thoughts yeah. are your brother. Some of your thoughts are that one person who said that one thing that one
but
time.
But before you understand that, you're like, I think I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah.
Like, what? I guess I suck and I'm broken. Yeah. Like, it's wild. Yeah. Yep.
Well, also piggybacking off that, I think like we try to act like if we are suffering, something is wrong, when in reality, most of human existence is suffering, which yeah. just sounds just like some kind of.
That's
like
a Buddhist quote, though. All of life is suffering.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's from Pemdra Chodron. When things fall apart. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what it is. And I mean, Ram Dass talks about it too, but it's like basically like we're trying to escape human suffering when in reality, like that's what it is.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like almost like how to like deal, I guess, with the constant nagging pain of it.
Right. Yeah.
Or just, you know, realizing that everything you have that you need is inside yourself, and there is this inner peace that you could reach inside yourself. You just have to work at making it more accessible.
Yeah. And also come into grips with it. Like,
yeah.
Because what you were saying, Karin, is true, is I think we tend, like, for example, with meditation, I used to think meditation was like this magic thing. You're sitting there, you're in nirvana or whatever, and
sure.
everything's gone. But it's really more of a coming to grips with everything. So like part of meditation is when you get these thoughts that will come and
yeah.
will always come for the rest of your life, you know what they are, and you can kind of just let them go. They come in and they go.
Yeah.
They come in and they go.
Pema Chodron said one of the best things that honestly saved me from killing myself, which was like just labeling the thoughts as thinking,
yep.
no matter how severe right. they are, no matter how brutal they are,
yeah.
just go, oh, thinking,
yeah.
I'm thinking. And that's so helpful, because
yeah.
meditation a lot of times for most people is loud. It's loud
yeah.
in your head, but that's really good. I think it's really healthy,
because yeah.
then you go, oh, these are all thoughts. I am me.
Yep.
I'm the one who's noticing the thoughts. Okay, there's a separation.
Yep.
I see.
Yeah, that's 100% true. And you use your breath as an anchor. You
yeah.
use your breath as an anchor into the real world, the real you and all that stuff. And then you're able to kind of do this process.
Yeah, yeah.
No, and this is great. Now we're in a new age podcast. This is
yeah,
cool.
Have you ever tried tantric sex? I know it's
No,
there,
I've
but,
never
okay.
gone that
route. I really
route.
Want to try that. That's I got to try that.
You guys got to have Sting on the podcast.
I know. I'm friends with the guy who's drumming with him. Maybe he'll.
He's the only guy I've ever heard of that does tantric sex.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
he's the only guy who does tantric sex.
There's gotta be more people.
Sting.
There's gotta be. I mean, it's just, but have you ever done that thing? Like my ex and I did this where like because we lived together for 6 years, we're like, let's just experiment
just
with each other.
Bored.
Just
that's how I pissed on someone. Yeah.
Yeah. But I love kind of getting sexually bored with a partner when you're so comfortable with them, because you're like, I don't know, let's try this. But like he would be hard, and then I would just I would sit on him, like his dick would be inside of me, and we would just kind of be like our chests were facing each other in like a little hug, and we would just sit there and watch TV, and I'm like,
nice.
I kind of like this. Because it made you want to fuck, but you're like, let's see how much far I can go without fucking.
I think
fucking.
That position's called
really...
the sloth. It's called the sloth.
Oh, is it? That's
no, I'm
nice.
Just kidding. Okay. That
it's like, did you go
it's the curious
Rica?
Sloth.
Yeah.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
But yeah, anyway, but wow. Meditation is really powerful in like just understanding your soul. You are a spiritual person in a human body, and you're like, oh, okay. And being human is tough.
Yeah, it's fucking tough. And it's hard to stick with it. It's like any other discipline. Like lately, I haven't been as good with it, but I want to be. And I guess it's hard because that's like anything else. Like you're in practice.
You know? Sure. Yeah.
And also too, you can't hold your. Well, at the same time, you can't beat yourself up for it. And I remember the quote was, "Remember, it's meditation practice.
Right.
You know, it's always practice. You're never going to perfect it. Don't beat yourself up for.
Don't try to be a monk level.
Yeah, exactly.
Just wait. Yeah. Well, because Robert Greene like talks about he'll meditate for like 45 minutes a day.
Wow.
Like to start it, like. He's like, I don't really get to writing until like 1:32 because he's like, I'll go for a run, I'll meditate, I'll eat breakfast, and then I'll get and sit down to write. I love hearing about how writers write because there's very little writing going on.
Sure. And they all hate it. Yeah. They all hate writing.
It's true though.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
True.
Mike's choking. We need that. question though. Okay. So perfectionism and beating yourself up. I totally relate to that. It's really difficult. It's one of the things where like when I was at my most depressed, I had like a year this past year of like really like all the stuff from the childhood, all the like being bullied by my parents finally like surfaced because I was ready to deal with it. And it was just brutal. But, I dealt with it. I'm so glad it's over. But that quality in a person, if you haven't really nipped it in the bud or like grasped it, when it surfaces in a relationship, for me at least in the past, it's pretty brutal because I'm not kind to my partner and then I hate myself for that and then blah, 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 all this stuff. So my question for you is, has that shown up in a relationship for you? And if so, what did that look like?
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I understand
Holy
the gravity
Lord.
Of that. It's a
it
big
is
one.
Like, I mean, that's been something. I'm in therapy now, like, and I've been with my girlfriend now for 2.5 years. And it's been almost 2.5 years, I guess. And it's been like a tough thing because it's funny because before you're in a relationship, those things manifest themselves in your career choice, in the way you write jokes or the way you feel about a bad set or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in a relationship, it mirrors its or it comes out in like how you feel towards a person,
in
the things in a person that bother you, in whatever, all these things that you're like, wait, I thought this was just me.
And
I
you forget that you something that bothers you about somebody else, it's really something that bothers you
yes,
about you.
Yes, exactly.
Like, ah,
yeah.
Fuck.
Or something in you that is holding yourself to a standard you can't meet or in you that doesn't want to be somewhere or something, whatever. So it's a million things. I mean, even the perfectionism. You can find imperfections in people where you don't need to be looking for them because you want out or because you think you should be doing better for someone else that is judging you or yourself or whatever, you know? And so it's been a big process.
It can be wicked.
Yeah, it can be brutal. And I think for that reason, I think before my current relationship, I wasn't in a relationship for like almost 10 years.
Well, that's why
when I came in here
and you said that you had a girlfriend, I was like, wow, I really need to catch up with Tom I always found it so interesting that you were like one of the most interesting, like charming, like people I knew, but like you were never in a relationship. And I could tell by the way you talked about it that it was like an area that was troublesome for you.
It was always trouble. I think like, and it's funny because in the past, like for example, I was dating someone, I started stand up and we were dating off and on. It was fairly serious. I mean, I guess she'd met my parents and whatever, but I just kind of turned my back on it to pursue stand-up because I was really just in love with what I was doing and I was fine. But after that, like it was, you know, a few months here, a few months there. And I would always, even when I found someone who I was like, oh, this person's great.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to like, you know, I'd find a reason not to. I would like, and it was subconscious, like what you were saying. Like these things come in, they're like, oh, but she's this or but she's not this or whatever. And you're like, yeah. And then you put enough distance there where you could still enjoy parts of the relationship, but then
fully in it.
Yeah. And enough distance to where that person's finally like, get the fuck out of here.
You're basically pushing the other person to be like, do you not want to be here?
Yeah.
Ugh.
And then when they say, I don't want to be here, you're like, of course you don't want to be here. Of course you don't want to be here. All right. See you later. You know, bye. Because you're like, yeah, that makes sense. I wouldn't want to be here either, you know. And you sabotage yourself.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so that's been something like you're 100% right. Like, you have to find out where that comes from. And it's such a struggle. And it's such a like, you know, and it's also confusing because who you are is built by all your insecurities and the things that you've experienced in the past and all this stuff as well. So you can't tell the difference sometimes.
Yeah.
You're like, where does what I actually want start and end?
And the old me.
Yeah, exactly. And where the things that I need to work on begin and start or begin and end, you know? So it's
but like, were you wanting a relationship in that 10-year period or were you or like, were you telling yourself that you didn't? Because I mean, I feel like society tells us that like we kind of always want to be in a relationship. But like in reality, I'm like,
one regret I have, I guess, or not, I don't like to say regret, but like if I was like living my life again, I would be in less relationships, sure, not more.
But it depends also too. I mean, you can qualify that. It's not also black and white. It's not relationship or no relationship. It's what type of relationship too.
Sure.
And that's another struggle.
What purpose it serves.
Yeah. What purpose it serves. What does it look like? And how do you, and another thing is, finding that out can be messy too.
And a lot of times when you still have shit to heal within yourself and you don't even know it yet, every single relationship just winds up being you try to fixing this thing in you that you don't even understand you're trying to fucking do.
Yeah, and not to mention that other person has their things they bring in. So it's a total shit show.
They both come to the table with holes and you're like, you fill my holes and I'll fill your holes.
Right, right.
But not the fun holes. The sad emotional holes.
Yeah.
In our soul.
So what finally got you to a place, or like how did you meet your current girlfriend?
Well, so I guess for a few years I'd wanted to be in a relationship, and it was mostly because of like being single wasn't it. You know, like I felt like it wasn't it.
Yeah, you go, I'm not that's happy not this way, so let me try the other
way. Yeah, it's like
I'm not happy either way, so.
Right.
I think there's
that's another thing.
Death is the only option.
Yeah, exactly. We could all just not be happy, period. Right. Yeah.
I go, well, this didn't fix it, so. Okay.
Well, it's crazy what some people will do to try to fix that unhappy. I mean, people will go their whole lives with a partner, and they're like, well, that didn't fix it.
Right.
Just, you know, they
you weren't the one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right. But no, it was kind of like this single life wasn't it for me. Like, you know, I guess you have some one night stands, you date people for a few months, different types of things you do while you're single. And,
sure.
And none of them really, I guess, did it. And I just remember thinking like it would be nice, and it seems
to
nice.
To build something,
to have someone in your corner, to have someone devoted and you devoted to someone else, and like be a team, you know, and make you better. I think that was also another thing that I was very interested in too, is like what – I want to be
benefits of being a heterosexual man. You can find someone to make you.
Yeah, sure.
It's not that hard.
I'll take it.
Oh, just any woman, pair up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Great. Straight any human. Gonna be better.
But yeah, it's I guess we're starting really low. That's why it's so weird.
Sorry, we're attacking Tom.
No, it's fair. No, that's fair. I deserve it.
You're actually the least deserving of it.
Well, we're straight women who live in New York City, and I feel like we've just witnessed a lot of our girlfriends date down. And sure. Us too. Sure. You know, we have in the past. And it's when you have a girlfriend that you're like, oh my God, their partner is like a prince and like just great for her. It never happens. It's rare that it happens. So it
never
happens.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Sucks.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's tough. It is tough. I mean,
so as a straight guy, do you also agree with that statement? Like, obviously, you see it from the other side, but like, do you find that to be true?
Yeah, you see people. You see people who are in relationships. You're like, oh, this is not going to end well.
Right.
Or you're like, this person is brutal.
Well, not that the girlfriend's always great. Because like, if I met
sometimes
like if sucks. I met someone who was dating you, I'd be like, oh my God, they have a great boyfriend. But then for 10 years, you didn't date anyone, and I go, what is he just playing games?
Yeah,
right.
What are the going on here?
What's your deal, Tom? Come on,
Tom.
No, it's true. And I you're right. Like,
help swing our stats, dude.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And I was like, oh, he knows his value, maybe.
Oh, big man on campus.
Fuckface.
But no, you're right. I think one of the things that I ended up kind of realizing is that you don't work on those things in a vacuum. You have to work on them with another person. I think part of working on it with another person is being open about it with that person.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, they're just like, why does he keep driving by himself for 2 hours every night? It's just you're giving this person like a bunch of weird stuff.
Is that something that you did?
No, that was weird that I said that.
No, that sounds like a great idea.
Honestly, that's something I do.
Go on. I'm like,
and I live alone.
Right, so you just drive.
I'm like, I need to listen to an audiobook for
sounds
a good hour.
So nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, what kind of things did you present to your girlfriend that you needed to work on?
Well, I think being more open. Like growing up, I didn't talk about things.
Yeah, same. So you feel about your feelings specifically?
Yeah, period. Like I didn't know. It was always.
You didn't have the tools.
You didn't have the tools. And also you build those like subconscious feelings towards it. You're horrified of it. You feel like bringing it up is a failure. You feel like bringing it up is putting too much on the other person. You feel like bringing it up is a complete mess, you know?
Or it's like revealing your
vulnerabilities.
Your vulnerability so that people can attack you, which, you know, I have and they did. So thanks, guys.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everyone. 100%. I was right. And that's more important.
Would not recommend.
But no, that's one of the things you have to learn pretty quickly. Otherwise, like I said before, people just bail. They're like, I'm out of here.
It's wild to be like at a precipice in a relationship because I'm in a new relationship and like all the old stuff that my old bullshit. And then you feel it coming up and you're like, we're not going to turn down that road, Christina. Yeah. We're going to turn down the other road, even though you don't want to.
Yeah.
And this one's better.
Yeah. Well, and also I'm sure I imagine in your case too, having been in other relationships, you're like, I thought I fixed this. I thought I was past this, you know?
And it pops up. And you're like, you again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why I think so many times in past, like, quote, relationships, shorter relationships, I had the same thing coming up.
I just love the idea of a woman watching this and being called a quote relationship.
Well, you know what I mean? Quote relationship in the sense where it wasn't exclusive.
I totally get it. They're feeling each other out still.
Yeah. So no quotes. Let's take the quotes away. No quotes. Yeah. It's full statement. But no, it's a, so yeah, in those times, I guess you feel the same things coming up, patterns. You're like, oh, this, I'm feeling
there's an app for that. Yeah.
Right. And it's true. You feel like, oh, I feel like an insatiable need to run away. I feel this or that and the other. And then you eventually kind of you were able to see.
What were your things? Like, I'll give you something that I did with like with this recent guy that I'm like, I ended up fixing it before I ran my mouth. Thank God. But it was like, I was in a bad mood and we were supposed to have plans and I was like, I'm not feeling it. And he's like, I basically accused him of not wanting to come over to hang out with me bad enough. And I'm like, Christina Marie, did you do anything like that?
I think what I would end up doing is in the past, especially too, I'd feel overwhelmed. I'd feel overwhelmed. I feel like I'm not able to give enough time to my stuff to do it. And it's funny because when I was, let's say when I'd be single, I wasn't always like it's like I'm some machine or something.
No, it's like you're sitting on the couch.
Yeah,
like,
I'm sitting on the couch.
Yeah,
as if I'm some kind of like, you know, superhuman.
I'll be like tweezing my leg hairs out one by one and be like, I don't have time.
Yeah, exactly right. It's so pathetic. It's clearly a total sabotage you're doing. Yeah. So I'll be.
But that time is precious to me, and that's how I like reboot. You know?
Yeah.
I feel like I don't have enough reboot time when I'm in a relationship, and then I just act like a bitch.
Yes, but what I think I failed in the past to do is to realize that you can get those reboot times in a relationship. You just have
with
to allow yourself. Yeah. And instead of being in your head of like, I don't have time to reboot. I don't have time to reboot. You could just be in the relationship, present in it.
Yeah.
And find it there.
And be like, hey, can we just read on the couch?
Yeah,
for an hour?
Exactly. And in your mind, you think the person's going to be like, get away. But they're just like, yeah, let's read.
Yeah.
Like,
oh,
so wait, okay, you're suggesting rebooting when the other person is in the room.
Possibly.
That doesn't sound like something you want to do.
No.
Possibly.
I can't because I can feel other people's energy. I can't even if they're being not doing anything.
Sure.
Just I know.
Like a lovely person.
It's like when we have to unplug the refrigerator to record the podcast. The refrigerator was doing very little, but it was going to fuck up the whole thing.
There you go.
That's
you
how
go.
I feel about a person in my space.
But then it's a matter of finding out what works in that relationship rather than running away from it. So like maybe if you mentioned it to your partner, like, hey, would it be cool if I just had an hour? They might just be like, yeah, I'd love that too, actually.
Right.
Let's do it.
Right.
Or maybe you find a new way to reboot together that when on top of you also rebooting separately.
And isn't that the fear,
like,
though?
I want me to say I need space from you and from the other person to say back to me, that devastates me, my queen. But I will step away.
That's a big ask.
I will step away for your.
Right.
No, I mean, like, so I've been rewatching Girls, and I mean, Lena Dunham says this line on Girls, and it's just like nothing has resonated with me more about like what she wants in a relationship. And she's just like, I don't need like an exclusive relationship. I just need someone who like thinks about me all the time, thinks I'm the best person in the world, and only wants to hang out and have sex with me. And I was like, yes, like obviously that's like the thing, you know? So fun.
Yeah.
I have met people like that over the years, like who I also feel that way about, but you know, for about 7 to 8 months.
I was gonna say, do you maintain the respect for them?
There's a couple people who I've gone into years with that I felt that way about the whole time. Yes.
Okay.
Well, and also sometimes people do the open relationship thing.
I've done that. Yeah.
I don't know if I could ever do that. Yeah. I don't know if I could do that, but that's another way to address it. I mean, there are different ways that people try to address things. I mean, I don't know. It's funny, but like there's you read like the attachment style. And all that stuff. And you get into cases where there are two different attachment styles, and the only way to fix that or to move forward is to talk about it and to figure out how to make them work, you know?
Right. Yeah. I was, there's this Instagram account I follow called The Secure Relationship. It's very interesting because what she does is she actually gives you scripts of like, this is what a secure relationship, how that would handle this specific problem.
Gotta look at this.
This
right
is how
now.
An insecure relationship would handle this specific
I've
problem.
I've never met anyone with a secure attachment in my entire life.
Well, the thing is, she lays out like a comic strip. Like, this is what this is how a secure relationship would handle a problem, because even secure or insecure, you're gonna have bumps in the road all the time.
Wait, what is it called again?
I think the secure relationship.
I want to read this script on the air.
I'll find it. I'll find it. Oh yeah, we
this
can
lady
do a role play. Yes.
Okay.
Oh wait, is that it? Yeah. So like, there's one.
Okay.
Attachment. It talks about attachment ruptures and how you're supposed to be able to fix it along the way, and that is the hallmark of a relationship that will go the distance, is if you're both fucking open about it.
Yeah.
And you go, you know. But
Let's see.
Well, it's interesting because on a lot of like relationship advice, the way they'll recommend speaking to your partner is a way that like it's to me, it feels like a preschool teacher talking to a child.
It kind of is.
Some people need that.
Yeah.
I think we're kind of dumb when it comes to communicating in an intimate relationship.
But it feels like the quote unquote correct way to speak to your partner, especially as a heterosexual woman in a relationship, feels to me patronizing.
Right.
I think both sides, though, to avoid anger, to avoid backlash and stuff, it is kind of necessary to be like, okay, listen. The way you said what you said bothered me, and I know you're coming from. You have to be as open and like.
So your partner tells you that they're feeling sad or that they're having a hard day. An insecure attachment response will be, I can't be responsible for your feelings. That's on you. Mm. You need to stop taking things so personally at work. Well, there's a lot to be thankful for. A secure attachment response would be, and obviously a variation of this, I'm so sorry you're struggling. That makes me sad too. It feels good that you're sharing your feelings with me, though. Would you like to talk about it? How can I comfort you?
That's how I would talk to my child.
Well,
It's so crazy because I'm just like, all these things is exactly how I would parent a child.
But you could also kind of make it your own. You can make the language your own.
I saved this post because I like this sentiment. No, communicating to your partner that it's important to know that you're valuable to your partner and that you're appreciated by your partner. And you that's the type of maintenance that I think a relationship needs. It's like, you are important to me. And like following this account for me reminds me that like, once I get a guy, like once we're in, I don't want to just stop doing things. Like,
right.
I want to be like maintaining the bond. There's ways to maintain a bond, like you tend a garden.
And on top of what you're saying, you have to find out what the other person and your way of showing that value
because different people have
different needs. So some people are like, I'll talk to you in a week or whatever. And the other person's like, oh my God, they haven't called me in 2 hours. It's a different thing.
Yeah. The guy, a couple weeks ago, the guy that I'm seeing, he was like, hey, I just, I'm at a bar with my friends. I just want to let you know I'm thinking about you. And I was like, whoa. That made my fucking week.
Right.
And I didn't even know. I wouldn't think words of affirmation are like it for me. But like that text, I was like, that made me so happy and like so smitten and so like, that just such a simple thing.
Yeah.
That's like easy for the partner to do.
I'm going to have to start setting reminders in my phone. Fuck.
To send Christina reminders.
Just anyone.
Christina, I'm just at a bar. I'm thinking of you.
Can you imagine?
You forget you have to like maintain the relationship.
But we do it with friends. I mean, like that's like tagging someone in a meme or sending someone. I don't send her a message like that because we're not in a lesbian relationship. But I do send her things all the time that's like, oh, this made me think of you.
Yep.
Just letting the person know you're thinking about them goes such a long way.
Yeah.
It goes such a long way.
And some people need more of that than others too.
Right.
Like, I mean, that's another thing. Some people are like, they haven't told me this thing in 2 weeks. I'm fine. You know, but other people need it more and you have to find that out. It was the whole love language thing.
Yeah.
I'm not Dr. Drew or whatever, but I've heard people say love languages. That's what that's called. You know, what's your love language?
And we've been tricked by songs and movies and basically everything in pop culture that says anything about romance, that it's like, you know, the other person should know our needs without us saying that. And that we're forgetting a very special step of like two, understanding what your own needs are.
Right.
And then two, communicating that.
Yes.
And it's not less romantic because you got to say it.
Definitely. And on top of what you're saying, you're right. 100%. And to what you and what Corinne was saying earlier, like, oh, I can't be told in such a simple way. It sounds like you're talking like a 2-year-old. But I think part of that is the reason we've been told that it should look a certain way.
Yeah.
It's fighting. It's like passionate. It's like, I love you. It could also just be like, informational, like I'm conveying this information to you in the simplest way possible. Let's not confuse things. I feel blank.
Yeah.
You, we're told that that's juvenile. That's not, but that's also effective.
Yeah.
And we're told that.
And as you do it more, you'll get better at like being suave about
it. Exactly.
But it's also it feels so maintenance-y, you know,
too.
And
it's
unromantic. I hate that feeling. Yeah.
Sure.
Well, how do you make maintenance romantic? There's a way.
You write it on hearts, on candy
hearts.
Honestly,
my relationship.
Damn.
My 7-year relationship, I loved finding like cute ways, like putting sticky notes in his suitcase before he went on a trip. Like I fucking love doing that shit. I think it's so cute. It's like very little kiddish. I think it's adorable. Do you guys do that for each other?
That's funny. I just imagine like a suitcase. He takes two suitcases. One is his
one
clothes
for my sticky
and
notes.
One is like just filled with sticky notes.
And presents.
Out. Right. And presents. Right. I guess I've gotten better at those things or have worked on them. I guess my girlfriend is a little better at those things and as more open. She's come from a family where it is open. And it's funny because one of the problems I've had is I've always been so averse to any kind of like emotion. You know, like because of the way I grew up, I never talked about emotion. And whenever I got emotion from my parents, like my dad, for example, would only be mad when I messed something up, you know. So other than that, it was my mom that we dealt with, you know. And I got so much of the lovey-dovey from her that I just kind of was like, oh, yeah, it's just mom, whatever, you know.
Right.
So eventually you just kind of learn that like these kind of like bubbling up is not good. Talking about emotion isn't good necessarily. So for me, it's been kind of that thing, like just – it's not bad to talk about feelings. It's not bad for the other person to be upset with your feelings. That's
right.
Healthy. There's a rupture that you're fixing. The rupture, initially you get a reaction for the rupture, but then you fix it and you move on.
Yeah.
But to me, just the rupture itself is like, no, please God, no. You know?
Well, the ways that we're parented really permeated in our relationships until we understand, like there's this notion of like, you know, we're talking about one of the things that in 2022 that's around so much more than when we were kids. It's like talking about what does a good parent look like and how does a good parent interact with their kids. And one of them is like don't assault your child's character when they do something wrong. Say, I'm upset with this behavior. I'm not upset with you. And when I first read that, I'm like, the fuck kind of pussy shit is this? Because I was raised, like if I fucked up, I was fucked up. Yeah. And like, I was wrong. And I'm like, oh my God, that little change truly does a number on you. Because then when you are in a relationship and someone does something that triggers you or that you feel fucked up, you blame it on that. You blame them. You blame their character. You assault their character in a way, or at least I did. And you're like, oh, that's not how it's supposed to be, because that's a rupture.
Yeah. And what you were saying with the sticky notes, like you should check in with the positive stuff as well.
Right.
And so a lot of times it happens with fathers, with dads who are just so busy with whatever, not that's not their thing, you know, and they just kind of check in only when they need to. Like, what'd you say to your mom? What'd you say at school? What'd you do at school? Other than that, they're just not there. And then so you tend to kind of eventually realize like, that's not good. That's not good if these things are happening, if I'm actually dealing with these.
And your incentive to behave well is just so dad doesn't get pissed at you. That's not a way to live.
Yeah. So those kind of things, and you're right. Like, I think that the throw in the fact that, you have to leave the sticky notes as a parent too, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. The sticky note, the suitcase full of sticky notes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love I love putting the work into a relationship. It's really fun.
I mean, you definitely learn a lot about yourself. And that's why I was saying to you, Corinne, it's nice to thinking back like on the 10 years that I was single, I'm like, man, I really kind of like squandered opportunities to learn about myself. Even if I didn't end up with any of those people, like I could have learned a lot about myself as a person and all this stuff. And my poor girlfriend Lucy had to deal with this kind of like just kind of like emotionally stunted person.
Yeah, you haven't had a girlfriend in 10 years. Wait, and I'm the first one.
Yeah, she's like, you're the equivalent of a 14-year-old boy. Like, I have to deal with this and basically teach you how to ride a bike, you know?
That's sweet. My boyfriend that connected most was, he hadn't been in a relationship in 8 years. And so that's interesting that you say that, because he did come into it quite emotionally stunted, but like did a great job, honestly.
He was probably really ready to do the work, I imagine.
That's what I was, exactly right. He probably came in willing to do something about it.
And it obviously, it makes you feel special, like, because it makes you feel chosen, which is, you know, what I'm aiming for.
Yeah, exactly. That's the most important thing.
That's the most important for me.
Yeah.
Do you feel chosen? Or do you even consider that?
I don't really consider that. No, I guess in the past, I've never thought about it that way.
I don't really hear men talk about that.
Yeah.
Because I feel like they already do feel chosen if they have a female partner.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe.
Just someone chose
you. Or maybe they just look at it more pragmatically, like practically, like there's no one type thing. Like, it is what you make of it. Like there's plenty of relationships where you're like, oh my gosh, this person, or you hear someone talking about it, this person's the one, and then they end 6 months later, he cheats, she cheats. Or whatever, it just ends a total disaster. Like, it's lust at one point, and that's emotional, all that. But then at some point, it becomes work. It becomes a relationship that you work on, you know, both of you.
And that's when you leave.
And exactly, that's when a lot of people leave. That's right. When it becomes work is when a lot of people leave.
Absolutely.
That's true.
Well, but you felt you were ready for a relationship. And then did you actually go on a dating app, or did you what actions did you take to make it come to fruition?
Well, I mean, I did do dating apps for a little bit. I only went on a couple dates dating apps were such a disaster, at least when I was doing years ago. Sure. I remember when I went on one date, the woman barely spoke English.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we spent 2 hours talking about the weather in Russia, you know, like in Moscow. Whoa. She was Russian. I was like, okay.
I can't believe you lasted 2 hours.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. We walked around and stuff. And
she's hot.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
That'll do it.
But no, it was, you know, so I didn't do much of the apps. But in comedy, as you know, I mean, you meet so many people. And I think it's easier for men.
I was going to say, that's a male experience.
Yeah, of course. It's way easier for men.
There's so many hot, awesome chicks to pick from.
Is the story you're about to fucking tell me that she was in the audience at one of your shows, Tom? Because I'm going to jump off the roof.
She's also an artist.
Corinne lives in another other day.
Yeah, yeah, she's also an artist.
But not a comedian?
She's a comedian, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, I like that you called her an artist.
Yeah. No, no. I mean, it's just
giving her incredible. Too much credit.
Well, I say that because she started out doing, her parents are both artists.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh,
she
cool.
started out acting and all these. She went to school for it and all this stuff.
Okay.
So yeah. And so she does it a lot.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I met her through a mutual friend for years ago. We were friends before, too. That's nice. Another thing. We were friends before, too, which is nice because a lot of the communication that's important, which is sense of humor, listening, all that stuff.
You already knew I was there.
Exactly. And you knew it was there. And you can build on it once you start a relationship.
Yeah.
So that in that sense, it was good. And it was and we had some mutual friends and it was nice. It was easier.
How do you
how did you transition?
It's interesting. The transition, I've done it kind of once, but like it's a weird transition. It's a little rocky.
I've never really done it. Yeah.
It can be. I mean, we started out because it started during a pandemic for us. Because she was traveling a lot for work and she finally stayed put for a while and we started hanging out more and just hung out more and more. And because there wasn't, you know, the complications of being out with other people and all this stuff, like you could really just focus on we could just focus on us two.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so the transition wasn't as violent abrupt.
Because you got to like watch movies all day.
Exactly.
Oh,
like
that's so fun.
Yeah, you just hang out and you go to I remember we were going to protests and we were like doing all this other stuff, like, you know, back and
so you.
Such a New York couple.
Yeah,
love
yeah exactly.
So
New
wait, York did you verbalize that feelings were happening or did you just like make out one day?
Well, we actually we had I guess hooked up, as the kids say, you know, before the pandemic and all that stuff, just like one-off time, and it was kind of we were both still busy with our own things, whatever. But then when the pandemic kind of happened, we just kind of started hanging out more.
If you want to hang out after the hookup, there's something there.
Yeah, but I mean that's another thing though too. When the world's still happening around you,
right.
You can kind of just write it off a little bit. Either one of you who wants to just kind of do your own thing, traveling, whatever. But once the pandemic happened, we had more time to spend with each other and all that, and that's kind of how it kind of happened.
Were you like pining over her or like thinking of her or like after you hooked up?
Yeah,
or?
I mean, yeah. I liked her. I definitely liked her. Yeah. I liked her before.
So it
we
wasn't toxic
up, you know?
Lust. It sounds
no,
like.
No, it wasn't. And part of the
which
like
is what a lot of people are like. That means it's real, but right. Not necessarily.
Well, when you get to my age, you realize that that's what it is, and you can look back and kind of identify that, and also you look at it once again more practically, and I mm-hmm. was. Looking like there, yeah, the lust was there, but also there's all this other cool stuff and all these other great character traits and things that I wanted to learn more about and mm-hmm. develop and all this stuff as well. And that's a practical decision in a way, you know, because you don't lust after, you know, someone who makes you think more about the way you do certain things, you know. That's not
for
something
sure.
that
God
that
that's truer words never been spoken on this podcast.
Guys don't get boners about that stuff, but I'm saying like, but that is still a consideration and it's still something that to me I thought was very important. So it gave me the impetus to kind of push past a lot of my issues and problems that I'd had in the past, you know.
Wow. Did you want to run?
There were definitely points where I had like, you know, cold feet about certain things. Labels you get into, like when those start coming up and all that stuff. Yeah, it just kind of like, I guess it kind of just like scared me, made me think like, oh, you know.
Especially you haven't been in a relationship, you haven't had a label in that long.
Yeah.
Well, and how did you get past that? Was like this, so was that like her being resilient or her, did she have
that
to walk away? Or
huge part of it was Lucy's resilience and her also her emotional intelligence. Like she grew up in a family where they communicated things. She's been in relationships before. She'd been in a long relationship before where she dealt with similar issues and things. And so she kind of saw with them for what they were.
She'd like guide you through them.
Yeah. And she's like, look, awesome. I know what's happening right now.
Sure.
You know, kind of.
Oh, that's so great when someone can steer the ship.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a moment where you're like,
Yeah. Exactly. Where you're just kind of like, you know, you're losing your mind. And so a big part of it was her. And also a part of it was just wanting to get through it, you know, and knowing what a bad thing it is, like what a toxic thing it is to have that carry around with you in your life, you know.
Yeah. And you're like, you know what? I don't know how old you are, but it's like, am I going to keep doing the same shit or am I going to act like a fucking adult and really like pick myself up here?
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think that you were talking about earlier, what it means to be a man. And that's kind of what it is. Like you have to face these difficult things. And so many times being a man, the difficult things are the guy who cuts you off in traffic. Mm-hmm. I got to face that or this.
Yeah. That's my kind of manliness.
Exactly. Right. But there are other things
fucking
too.
Tailgate you.
The ones that are harder to deal with as a man, like just improving yourself.
Right.
And realizing that's
a real man.
Yeah, that's like I think like dealing with those things that are so difficult is the harder thing is what I think makes someone, you know, transcend what a quote typical man is, you know, someone who does something beyond what, you know, there's tons of men who will, you know, yell at someone, whatever, do, you know, but it takes someone else to, I guess, do something that isn't necessarily one, accepted as being a man, and two, difficult to do, you know? So, yeah.
It's beautiful. What a beautiful 360 we just did.
I just came up with that off the top of my head. You know,
yeah,
no big
figuring
deal.
It out, Tom
Delgado. Yeah, just figured it out.
Tom, where can we find you online? Is there anything you'd like to promote?
Yeah, sure. So I have a YouTube channel where I actually do. I've been doing that lately. It's Tom DNYC, and it's a YouTube channel. I used to be a tour guide, so I do.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I do videos about New York and about different places where I travel, and
it's so refreshing to see those clips because it's so much better than bad crowd work. Like it's just to learn something.
Correct.
Oh my God. I love
and that's
it.
The thing, man.
Thank
I
you
can't.
For not creating.
I appreciate
not, thank
it.
Thank you for not contributing to the internet trash and actually adding something interesting.
I just
learned the history of Pearl Street instead of fucking hearing why the girl's drunk in the front row.
Yeah, right.
It's incredible.
Yeah, so I have that on Instagram too, on Tom DNYC Instagram. I put little clips, but I mostly do this to YouTube. I mean, I make a living off the YouTube now, which is nice. And have grown it. I was also pandemic, thanks to the pandemic.
Nice.
But yeah, just Tom DNYC on YouTube and Instagram. That's pretty much it. And then the weekly show I run on Wednesdays at What Else Comedy. And yeah, that's it.
Amazing.
That's me. Thank you. In a nutshell. Yeah.
All right. Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank
this
you
has
guys.
Been Guys We Fuck, the anti-slut shaming podcast. We'll talk to you next Friday. Bye.
Guys We Fucked is presented by Luminary.
Created and hosted by Corinne Fisher and Christina Hutchinson.
Editing and music coordination by Mike Coscarelli. Theme song by Rob Patterson and Jake Kozen.
Suck my wet ass pussy.
Christina said to cut that before, but now it's in there.
Yeah, let's keep it. Who cares?
Wake up morning, Papa Molly, disappointment, melancholy. Give my parents my apologies. I'm not who they thought I'd be. Honestly, do I have good qualities? No prodigy, plane crashed economy. Homily of my demons, calling me names. Biggest bully is my brain. Hurricanes of shame, straight to the edge of insane. Only my mind to blame, memory refrain. You're playing all of my pain. Brain, shut up, do cocaine, it works. Do it again, reverse. Cocaine, do shut up, right? Pain, it works. Can you heal me where it hurts? Birth's a curse, life gets worse and worse.
My dreams having dreams, and I'm dreaming having nightmares that keep me awake in my sleep. Into the void, screaming I'm into myself, and I'm way too far gone to compete. World at a standstill, but I keep running and running, can't stand still, I'm on the kill. Society holding me under the water, anxiety in my blood. Up to slaughter, mental disorder, and looking so good. Lex bro, bitch, you wish you could. Psychosomatic erratic, semi-automatic, big bad, bitch, that's like what happened.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.